Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Yeah, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist. But having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I managed to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to need it there.
I'd say it to your face and I'll say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawny man?
Move over, George Mendes, Mino Raiola and Pina Zahavi if you're still knocking around. There's a new super agent in town and his name is Rio Ferdinand. Welcome to the Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hi, Ken Emmer.
Hey, Owen, how's it
wasn't
going?
Wasn't Pini Zahavi Rio Ferdinand's agent?
Well, he learned from the best. He learned from the original super agent, or at least one of them. According to the Athletic's big breakdown of how the Ronaldo deal was done, Rio Ferdinand stepped in heavily, almost acting as a broker on behalf of United, it says here. Ferdinand had a passionate conversation with longtime United teammate Ronaldo, who was genuinely inquisitive about the impact moving to City might have on his United legacy. Ferdinand was firm in counselling Ronaldo over the hurt seeing him joining City might cause, set against the joy that returning to Old Trafford would bring him and United fans. Ferdinand is also close to Woodward and made sure United were informed over the financial details. He was still up at 1:30 a.m. sending messages to get the deal moving.
1:30 a.m.
Yeah. In provocative social media updates on Friday afternoon, sunglasses shielded the bags under his eyes. They attach a link to Rio's tweet. He says, well, actually, he writes, what a 24 hours it's been.
Had he been up for 24 hours?
That seems to be the implication here, yeah. Certainly, he'd been up late into the night.
Yeah, another implication is that he went to bed at 1:30.
Was he out with Michael Gove in that nightclub in Aberdeen?
So Rio writes this message along with a silent video of himself breaking into a broad triumphant. So just it shows him sitting there with his shades and you can see the bags under his eyes, even through the shades. He's just standing there looking stony-faced and then slowly cracks a broad triumphant grin, showing without words the same sort of bullish confidence we all became so familiar with during Euro 2020.
I am super confident and this team just made me just feel kind of relaxed. So I'll just sit back in my chair and just let you take it away, Gary.
See, the problem with England was Rio couldn't take an active role other than as the country's main cheerleader. But with the Ronaldo one, he took the bull by the horns. He got the deal over the line. He delivered a club legend back to his adoring fans. Ken, Manchester United should be down on their knees thanking Rio super agent Ferdinand.
Even more confident now.
Particularly Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. You know, I think he really needs to, he should probably be sending Rio a bouquet of flowers and a couple of bottles of champagne for all the help that he's given him. In finally sorting out this mess of a team, bringing in Ronaldo. It must be so great to have so much help from so many people in taking the initiative in reshaping your team moments before the transfer window slams shut.
Ferguson, Rio, Evra, a lot of them. Everyone was at it.
He forgets the help I gave him, by the way.
just when it looked as though you got most of your ducks in a row, your little ducks were in a row with, you know, the attacking ducks, the couple of players in each position, you know, and now it's like, okay, it seems like we've got it all set up. Now let's just bring in Ronaldo and just like send all the skittles flying hither and yon. So, you know, it's really amazing. I mean, obviously, the last time we spoke, Owen, was on Friday morning. And at that point, we said, Ronaldo's going to Manchester, we think, still to Man City. But, of course, it wasn't that way. It was
events, dear boy, events.
And, yeah, he, as Guardiola said in his press conference, look, players like this, the players like, they decide, you know. There's not really much we could do. I mean, it wasn't that City had pulled out. It was that Ronaldo said, thanks, but no thanks. I'm going to Man United.
They do and they don't decide. I mean, according to, and we're going to talk to Laurie Whitwell about his report on Ronaldo's return. He was the one who put that one together for The Athletic. But according to that, he'd been offered to plenty of other clubs. Real Madrid didn't want him back. Paris Saint-Germain didn't want to go for him. And then it kind of went back to the...
But between those two,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, you know, City had tried, but ultimately, what could they do when Ronaldo's heart was set on a return to Old Trafford? So he's back. And you could see the reaction of the United fans, I mean, everywhere. You know, it's a mass celebrations. It's a great day. Why are you laughing?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. No, please continue to talk. I'm putting myself back into the frame of mind of Friday and Saturday, which was honestly some of the most mental hours of football supporting that there's ever been.
It was a peak experience for you, wasn't it? What was the best part of it? What was the best part? What we're doing here. This is like a vox pop. We're interviewing a United fan. This is like you're outside Macari's chipper, and. You're about to give us the lowdown. This is the voice of Manchester United is about to speak. Tell us.
The highlight of the whole thing for me was when my brother John texted me to say that really hope this doesn't derail Anthony Yolanga's development, which I thought was pretty good, to be fair.
Well, look, this is what it's about. You know, bringing brothers together. You know, that's what this is about. More than, you know, the considerations, the sort of tactical footballing considerations of, you know, what's actually going to happen out in the field. It's about brotherhood. You know, it's about a shared international brotherhood. 700 to 800 million brothers and sisters brought together as one by the return of another of their brothers from his long exile. Very long exile. 12 years. It's been 12 years. A lot of trophies, a lot of goals. And now he's back. And who am I to quibble with the wisdom of such a move?
Before he plays again at Old Trafford, he will be playing in the Algarve against us on Wednesday night. He'll be in chipper form for that one, no doubt. Ken flies out later to see that one live. We'll have a preview podcast on the day of the game on Wednesday from Portugal. And on Thursday, Richie Sadler will also be on to reflect on whatever grisly scenes we have witnessed on the Wednesday evening.
To hear those podcasts, that we have meted out to the Portuguese.
Can you imagine if we beat Portugal? Let's not get ridiculous here. To hear those podcasts, you'll need to be a World Service member. €5 a month plus VAT to join. You can look at doing that on secondcaptains.com. It only takes a minute or two. Before you fly out, Ken, please deliver the first report on sports since the news broke.
Well, we remember the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer era truly began on one night in Paris. What's your memory of that night in Paris? What's the single iconic image of that night?
Where would you like your statue, Ollie?
Oh, I wasn't even thinking about that, but I mean, that's, you know, that obviously is up there. You know, there's
that was Rio as well, wasn't it?
That was Gary Neville.
Why am I saying Gary?
Gary Neville in the post-match interview, I think. Rio was slapping down the piece of paper on the table. So, you know, where would you like your write your own contract or whatever. Man United are back. I think that was that night. Now the image that I was thinking of was the photograph of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer flanked by the beaming Eric Cantona and Alex Ferguson. As these three great, you know, like a superhero coming together, you know, a kind of not
Avengers
Suicide
Assemble
Squad.
Type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which kind of, it sent the United social media sphere into just ecstasy. You know what I mean? It was like, whoa, you know, we're really turning the volume up to 11. We are twiddling the knob of the United support all the way into the red zone. And it was an exciting, they were exciting, heady days, brain fizzing days. I mean, it was as though the brain was fizzing and crackling so much that the vision faded out. And you may recall Barcelona pasted them 4-0 in the next round of the Champions League. And a longer rebuilding process set in. A rebuilding process which I think you could see in recent records. I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there's no need to downplay your own record, Ollie. you know, by pointing out that the United's now historic run of historically unprecedented run of 28 away games unbeaten largely took place in empty stadiums. There's no need for you to point that out. I mean, you know, take the credit while it's going. But perhaps this was an indication that this long and patient rebuilding process was approaching some sort of form of completion. You know, a team that can do that is clearly not to be sniffed at. But now we've decided to twiddle that knob again. That knob is getting twiddled all the way. And an explosion has resulted. An absolute...
We're Man fucking United!
You know, the enthusiasm of the Manchester United supporters is everywhere.
Do you see it that way, though? But you see, you see it as almost a disruptive signing. But of course, even that word has positive connotations in modern business speak.
I see it.
Ronaldo is a disruptor, and this is maybe what any team needs.
No, they've signed him because Man City were about to sign him. That's how I see it. Because you know, if they wanted to sign him before, then maybe they would have tried doing it. I mean, they literally wait until, oh no, he's going to Man City. We can't let that happen.
Well, there seemed to be some sort of open, very loosely defined open dialogue where he always knew, and they always knew at Juventus that we'd like to sign him, but I don't know how firm the...
So he had to threaten. He had to threaten to join Man City to crystallise that desire in their game. I mean, that's literally what happened. But you know, the obvious, this isn't the first time that happened. Obviously, the Alexis Sanchez deal happened when he was going to go to Man City, and United swooped. Ed Woodward was as visible with that deal as he has been with Ronaldo. I mean, we all thought Ed Woodward was resigning. I mean, he's resigning at some point down the line, but he's been everywhere all over this deal, twiddling the knob, sending it into hyperdrive. Because, you know, he has in some ways been a fine executive chairman. I know it's not as though he wouldn't say, look, his record has been perfect, but this has been... You know, there have been some high points as well, and I'm sure we would agree this is one of them. But I mean, the usual, why do they not try to sign him before? I think it might have had something to do with him being 36. That's 7 years older than Alexis Sanchez was when he joined Manchester United, and it turned out he had too many miles on the clock. Ronaldo is a different player. He's always been a sort of a level above Alexis Sanchez. I think we can all agree on that. But at the same time, 36 is quite old. And I think this might have been the key reason why Manchester United didn't seem to be interested in making this move before. Because if you look at what Ronaldo brings, it's clear that he brings... Like, he's the biggest star in the world. Like, he's a bigger star than Lionel Messi. Is he a better footballer? I don't believe so. I think Messi has been a better footballer. But Ronaldo... is a star. I think he's probably slightly the more famous of the two. I mean, I don't know. It's how can you quantify these things? But the two are like way up there ahead of everybody else in the world. And so you've got the opportunity to sign this player. I mean, yeah. Like you're gonna sign him. I mean, certainly Man City, I thought when Man City went for him, they had a place in their team for this, for like a goal scoring center forward. You know, they literally don't have a player just like that. Although, you know, they've got a couple of Jesus is a sort of a bit of an all-round forward who can play in the middle, has done. Ferran Torres is showing a lot of potential as a kind of a false nine with clever movement, you know, and scored another couple of goals against Arsenal, you know. So, but in terms of just a Ronaldo center forward who will jump 8.5 feet into the air and head the ball into the top corner. I mean, they could have done with that. Did Ronaldo actually Manchester United do have a player a bit like that in Edinson Cavani, who's a couple of years younger than Ronaldo, and quite a lot of other attackers who will be trying to figure out where they fit in now that.
But that's interesting. Before we get into those, that it's interesting that you think that he is a better fit in a football sense for City than United, because most of the narrative was around how, why would Pep Guardiola break basically every rule in his book by signing an aging superstar player who will be unwilling to do any serious running and fit into his system
is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, does Ole Gunnar Solskjaer believe in like having forwards who don't really chase? I mean, he hasn't showed me that. I mean, he got rid of Lukaku, didn't he? Lukaku, who's now back with Chelsea, because I guess he didn't think Lukaku was was mobile enough. You know what I mean? I mean, Lukaku is mobile, but in sort of quick bursts. He's not like an insistent chasing presence in the game the way that, oh, somebody like Cavani is. You know, Cavani, if you look at it, is 34, but he still does a lot of work. I mean, physically, he chases a lot. He doesn't score as much as Ronaldo. He doesn't shoot anywhere near as much as Ronaldo. But he does chase and put pressure on the opposing team, which Ronaldo, you know, doesn't do. I mean, it's almost not even a criticism of him to say he doesn't do that anymore. It's just like, well, look, you know, he's 36. He's not quite the... He focuses his energy on... you know, like a lion that lies under a tree most of the day, and you know, you don't see the lion like doing shuttle runs. You know what I mean? That's not what it's about. It's about like one burst of speed, you know, and you know, you bring down the kill. Everyone gets to eat for another day. That's the way Ronaldo is at this point. You know, Pep Guardiola has a team which is more capable of holding possession than, you know, the United team. I mean, the United game against Wolves yesterday was a real... You'd hope that sort of early season rustiness, you know, like in terms of how open they were to Wolves. I mean, Wolves slaughtered them on the XG, you know what I mean? the XG did not make pretty reading, but obviously the outcome was ultimately good for Manchester United. But if on this question, I don't know why I keep answering it in such a roundabout way. I just feel as though City's squad had more space for what Ronaldo particularly is offering. I mean, United will be able to make space, clearly, and they will, by shoving other people out of the way. I mean, what's the usual logic for making a signing like this? It's like, well, you know, he's past his best. I mean, it has become a bit of a tradition with United. You know, they've signed Zlatan. Mourinho, I think, wanted to bring in a bit of the Zlatan mentality. You know, Zlatan was kind of an old soldier of his. Bring him in, he'll be my man in the dressing room. That was kind of the logic. Cavani comes in. Cavani was more opportunistic, I think. It's like, well, you know, maybe, you know, we don't really have a centre forward. I mean, they had Martial, they had like the young sort of Greenwood, but you know, they could do with a player like that, and it was a short term sort of a deal. With this, though, Ronaldo's going to be the best paid player in the league, and he's also the number one name on the team sheet. Like, he's bigger than the club. You know what I mean? You sign a player who's bigger than the club, and this is a big club. But at the same time, you know, when Juventus signed him, remember when in 2018 Juventus signed him and the shocking thing was that they were paying him so much and had paid so much to Real Madrid to take him, even though he was already 33 years old. And I was like, wow, it's kind of mad that they are kind of betting so much on a guy who's that age. Now, clearly the difference with the United deal is the transfer fee is a lot shorter, but the wages are still pretty big. But for Juventus, they believe that Ronaldo could be for them a transformational player in the sort of commercial sense, in the sense of global profile, in the empire building sense, that Ronaldo would turn the eyes of the world upon Juventus in a way that no other player could.
And win them a Champions League while he was at it.
And win them Champions League. So obviously the Champions League bit didn't work out. And whether the eyes of the world were on Juventus, well, not really. Maybe they might have been if they got a bit further in the Champions League. But it didn't really work out, ultimately, commercially. And then the coronavirus pandemic happened and blew a massive hole in their finances. And at the end, they were desperately trying to get rid of Ronaldo because the whole thing had failed. But the logic was there, you know, and you know, he did bring increased sponsorship to them, and he did bring increased social media following and all this sort of thing. Manchester United are a different case. I mean, you can say the same thing about PSG and Messi, right? Messi made his debut for PSG last night, which was kind of weird to watch. I don't know if you were watching it, Owen, but it was like, I can't, sort of, something slightly uncanny about this. It's slightly anticlimactic as well. You know, like he comes on, Mbappe had scored two goals already. The PSG fans were all celebrating. Messi just coming on. He didn't really do much in the game. At the end, like, the Rennes goalkeeper, like, brought his kid, gave him to Messi and stepped back to take a photograph. And I thought, oh my God, really? Is this, like, that's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing it's embarrassing for the league. It's embarrassing for Messi. You know, is this really what... Like, that's what happens if Messi plays a golf pro-am. You know,
are we going to see...
I don't know if he plays golf, but it's not like... that shouldn't be happening on the field after a serious game. You know what I mean? That's nonsense. I mean...
Are we going to see that when Man United play Norwich at Carrow Road. Couple of the Norwich players, just to pick the bottom place club in the league.
Well, mate,
are they bottom? They've got a point in the board now.
No, right? Arsenal. I don't think maybe it'll happen. Arsenal.
Oh my god, the Arsenal players.
Yeah, Shaka will run on in his suit because he's probably suspended, and ask for a photograph with Ronaldo. But like, you know, I thought that was embarrassing. I mean, I'm not the only one. I'd love to know what this man thought about it.
No, I just think because people are busy and they see somebody who might be in the public eye and they go, I just want a piece of you. Or can you sign that? Even City fans come up, hey, a photograph. Well, you want a photograph with me? Why? Because I can send it. It's just, to me, it's a busyness. It's not a respect thing.
Yeah.
I think the people who respect you leave you alone. If I saw somebody walking down the street, if I saw Bob Dylan come down there with his guitar, I'd probably just go, Bob, and let him walk by. I wouldn't go, oh, fucking photograph, Bob.
Yeah, that was Keane. I was talking to Gary Neville. That was a good interview. I have to say, Keane remains funny. He remains an extremely funny man, but look, the point I was going to make with Messi and PSG is PSG signed Messi, and suddenly it's like I saw there was a story there. Oh, Vietnam signs deal to broadcast Ligue 1. A deal signed to broadcast Ligue 1 in Vietnam, and like new territories are like, oh, hang on, Messi's playing there. Let's start broadcasting the league. So like, there's this sort of not just on PSG in terms of building their profile, but which it did, Messi's arrival, but also like a halo effect, sort of lifting the whole league. Wow, you know, this is where Messi is and so on. With Man United, with the Premier League, is that really the case? Like, where is gonna, is, are we gonna get like a TV contract with, like, you know, a Martian deal? You know what I mean? Like, the markets are already open. Like, the eyeballs are already swiveled and turned towards Man United. I feel as though there's not really that much more that he can bring in this sense. So I feel as though that they've just signed a new long-term shirt sponsorship deal, right, with TeamViewer. That's their new shirt sponsor this season. So I'm kind of looking at where is the room for growth? Like,
yeah, but Ken, it's the eyeballs that they're getting are the ones that would have been turned towards Manchester City. That's the point. That is the central kind of theme of this.
Well, we come back to Manchester
Ken,
City.
Yeah. Well, hold on a second though. Like,
oh, you're getting a bit annoyed there, are you? Oh, this is you're getting triggered. Come on, no, go on, shoot.
Well, I find it interesting the way you're framing the fact that Ronaldo is playing for Manchester United. Like, he will score 25 league goals. And United's season last year wasn't derailed by the games against the Big Six. It was, like, horrendous home draws against terrible teams. And, like, if Ronaldo scores in 80% of those games, which you'd have to think, on all available evidence, that he will, then that's the difference, you know? Mm. Like, absolutely, United didn't need Ronaldo in the way that Ligue 1 needed Lionel Messi. But at the same time, like, the on-the-field benefit could be all the benefit that Man United need.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure that Ronaldo's going to score lots of goals, but how does it then affect the team? I mean, what does Bruno think about this?
Well, he was Rio's right hand man in the brokering.
Yeah,
by the sense.
I know, yeah, but I mean, it's one of those things where you can't really be seen to drag your feet, can you? Like, oh, Bruno, yeah. Bruno didn't send the text. Oh,
okay. Listen, they dovetailed to great effect at the Euros, and by dovetailed, I mean Ronaldo forced him out of the team.
I mean, you know, like Bruno. I saw him taking, with an air of regret, his possibly last ever free kick for Manchester United in the first half of the Wolves game. You'd imagine he's already taken his last penalty, unless he happens to get picked in a Carabao game when Ronaldo's being rested. I mean, you know, this is all conditional on Ronaldo actually staying fit, which is, you know, he's usually been able to do that throughout his career. However, he is old. I don't know if you saw Patrick Bamford getting repeatedly beaten by James Tarkowski. Yes, Bamford afterwards said, "Yeah, I was actually a little bit annoyed. I like the physical stuff. It was a good battle with Yerry Mina last week as well. You remember that there was the moment when Yerry Mina looked like he was about to sort of just bury Bamford. You know, pick him up and drive him into the ground." But that Tarkowski had done some jiu-jitsu move on him. But of course, the referee was... Tarkowski was jumping into him, like forearming him in the back of the skull. And the referee was like, come on, play up and play the game, lads. You know, that's the new... This is the league where Paul Pogba can go over the ball and into the foot of Ruben Neves. They look at the mirror, they go... And then they book Neves for whining about it. That's the league that we're talking about here. So Ronaldo now has to remain fit in a league which is a little bit more testing than it had been. But assuming he does, then he becomes the high usage player in the team. I mean, what do I mean by high usage? I mean, if you look at Bruno Fernandes, remember there was a good piece on this done by Tom Warville a while back on The Athletic. He was the sort of data numbers guy for The Athletic. His point about Bruno was that he was the player in the league who used the highest percentage of his team's possessions, by which I mean to use a possession means to basically end it. I mean, a team gets a certain number of possessions in a game. When you win the ball, that's a possession until you lose it. So that's one, and then it happens again, that's two. You see what I mean? So Bruno was, at that point, which is like a bit this time last year, using nearly 20% of United's possessions. That is to say, when the ball came to him, 20% of the time, that was the end of the move. Often it was a goal, often it was an assist or a key pass, you know, a cross or a shot that went over the bar, a crossfield, an ambitious raking ball that went out of play on the far side, whatever. The point is that Bruno was the man that the team looked to make something happen. And if you're that guy, you also have to accept. And who was number two on the list? Who do you think was the second the player who used the second highest proportion of his team's possessions? Are you still there? Is anyone?
No, it's not an easy one, Ken. I mean, I was trying to figure out first, were you talking about within Man United, but you're talking about
Harry Kane. Sorry, within the league. No, not Harry Kane.
Harry Kane.
Harry Kane. Remember, this is August 2020.
Mo Salah.
No. But you're sort of...
Okay, then. Sadio Mane?
No, it was Kevin De Bruyne.
De Bruyne?
Kevin De Bruyne followed by, I think, Trent Alexander-Arnold was third. So what you see is like these players are the creative outlet for their team, right? They're the ones who give the team gives them the ball and it's make something happen, and often it doesn't. You know, none of them have great... They're all great passers who don't have great pass completion percentages, and this is because they're encouraged to take risks in possession, because that's how they create chances, that's how their team scores goals. And you could see this yesterday when Bruno was very early in the game, ran forward, Sancho's to his right, Greenwood runs to his left, and Bruno decides to take a shot from outside the box. Do you remember the move I'm talking about? And Sancho's like, why didn't you pass? You know, Sancho was in a good position, given the ball, and this is like a dangerous situation for him. You know, he's going to have the ball in the box, at his feet. He could do some damage. Bruno has a shot. Now, those days are done. That's not going to happen anymore. You don't do that. Remember what happened to Jota when he did that? Do you remember when Diego Jota decided to shoot instead of passing to Ronaldo? Do you remember what happened? And did you see the video of what happened at halftime in that game? When Ronaldo, this is the Portugal-Hungary game, Jota ran down the right, Ronaldo was screaming for it on the left. It was not quite the Fernandes-Sancho situation yesterday, because Ronaldo literally was open, and if Jota had passed him, he has a free shot at goal, so it's probably going to be a goal. Pass the ball, Jota shoots. Ronaldo screams like, Ronaldo, you know, his face turns purple, absolutely enraged. Then later at halftime, Ronaldo was standing in the tunnel. This is weird video. I mean, you can look at Ronaldo's reaction to Jota. It's weird. I mean, Ronaldo sort of looks at the camera. Jota comes up behind him, and you see Ronaldo turn around, sees Jota, then looks back at the camera, and sort of as though he's trying to do this without catching Jota's, without Jota noticing, sort of is shaking his head. No, no. He's shaking his head, and he's like, basically, no, not this guy. No, no. And you're kind of like, okay, well, that seems a bit immature for a 36-year-old, but like at the same time, you've made your point, right? And Ronaldo makes these points. This is how the team will be revolving around him. Bruno Fernandes is not going to be taking penalties, not going to be taking free kicks, he's not going to be having shots from distance, he's not going to be doing all the things that have made him Bruno Fernandes. What I'm saying is this is like the impact that bringing Ronaldo in has. He's going to score goals, but what are the effects on the other players? What's the effect on Greenwood? You know, does Greenwood thrive? I mean, I saw Robbie Keane. Robbie Keane was on with Roy Keane and Souness. Souness was doing a lot of talking over Robbie Keane, if you noticed. It was extremely funny. But Robbie Keane was saying, well, you know, Greenwood can't but learn from one of the great players. And this is like, you know, when you've got Ronaldo there, he is a benchmark for everybody to go, wow, this is... Here we have like the, you know, the eighth or the ninth wonder of the world. He is one of the all-time greats. let's watch him to see what he does. What's his, you know, what are his habits? What's his way of working? You know, that's obviously going to be interesting for every player to see that. You know what I mean? It's not like when he was there the last time, when he arrived as a kid and he was like a junior player and they were like laughing at him for, you know, spending too much time doing his hair and all this type of stuff. It's a different setup now. Now they're like, whoa, here he is, like the great one. But it doesn't necessarily mean that like his presence there is really going to suit them. I mean, when you say Greenwood is going to learn from Ronaldo, okay, but as long as he's playing, but where is he going to play? You know, you've got Sancho, he's 85 million, he's probably going to play. You've got Pogba, he played in the left in quite a lot of games. Is he going to play there anymore? Probably not. But is he going to play in midfield? Well, that's what happened yesterday. Yeah. So I think it's, and as for Rashford, well, I think it's just good that he's got interest outside the game at this point because, you know what I mean? Like, it looks to me as though he's going to have more time to devote to those types of projects with the setup now. So it is an interesting one. I think it's a big reaction. It's clear that it's a reaction that brings a lot of pleasure to the supporters. It is going to be interesting to see how it works out, but I wouldn't necessarily think it was the greatest day in the history of the club.
You're not going to derail Murph's excitement, okay, no matter how hard you try.
Have I managed to drip a few little drops of poison in your excitement?
No, sure. I mean, like by Saturday morning,
is there
I think
a slightly metallic,
most people had
taste.
Woken up and been like, that was a lot of fun. But it was kind of like, you know, at the end of a really good TV, like the end of a really good season of a TV show, yeah. You know?
The end.
So you find, like, so like the, no, the end of like season two of a really good, like multi-season TV show. I was like, oh my God, what? This is unbelievable. You know, this main character has been killed off or married or whatever. Mm. And then season three will automatically start with a extremely downbeat revision of, you know, basically what comes up is season three, the first title shot will be 6 weeks later. And then you realize, oh, God, we got really excited about that guy's death slash marriage slash murder, acquittal. And then you realize, oh, but not everything in the garden is rosy, is it?
It wasn't.
And by that,
so
I mean,
we don't live happily ever after. The struggle continues.
The struggle continues, exactly. And I think by Saturday morning, everyone had realized, well, that was like extremely good theater. I mean, was it good football business, though? Who knows? And quite frankly, for now,
who cares? and again, if he had joined Man City, that would have been bad. That would have been,
yeah.
So, you know, if this is what it costs, if he's going to have to take 25 million a year of Joel Glazer's money to, you know, it's not really Joel Glazer's money, but, you know, if that's what it takes, then, you know, I'd say a lot of United fans like yourself, Kieran, are prepared to make that sacrifice.
What else is going on?
Well, Man City had another 5-0 win, roughly doubling the margin of their victory against Norwich. 5 goals, but I'm talking, obviously, on, as always, about the XG.
She's big into it today.
What about the XHAKA of Arsenal's midfield leader? A player who they spent all summer apparently trying to sell, then changed their mind and gave him a new contract and the captain's armband. Once City went,
maybe we can change him. This is like the worst marriage. This is literally the worst marriage in the world. You know, maybe I can change him.
Murphy, he's the bad boy character in your fictional TV series
Man. His faults can be turned into an advantage. His faults are really just areas for potential improvement.
Having started the game, you know, that they played a really good first 5 minutes. I felt. I don't know if you watched the game, but Arsenal in the first 5 minutes showed promise. There was one move where they actually worked the ball up to City's penalty area and then transferred it out to Cedric Suarez on the right. And they had like 4 or 5 players in the box. I'm not kidding. They had 4 or 5 Arsenal players in the box. But then for some reason, Cedric decided, ooh, I don't know if I want to risk putting it in there. I know what, I'll play it safe. And went back. And that was, I think, the last Arsenal attack of the game. There was another one where Smith Rowe tackled Ederson and the ball almost flew into the net, but it actually flew across goal. Honestly, I don't remember Arsenal having another attack. There was almost immediately after their initial promising foray, Gundogan manages to score a Duncan Ferguson goal at the back stick. which is just, you know. Then Torres scored a second goal. Where Arsenal, I think maybe they had a case. It was another one of these, play up and play the game. You know, so what, you've been punched in the face by Laporte. You know, get up and punch him back. You know, bullies, you have to stand up to bullies, say the VAR. Similarly with Neves and Pogba later or the next day or whatever. You know, it is kind of amazing that at this point they are literally just watching blatant fouls and just ignoring them. Although not in your game, Owen, not in the Premier Sports game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a joke. Another stupid decision where Soyuncu conceded the penalty when I thought that it was clear the Norwich player had deliberately engineered the... Well, I mean, Soyuncu gave him the opportunity to do this, but
and there was the analysis from Neil Lennon and Damien Delaney Kane. He gave the ref a decision to make to use the balance.
I mean, if he
slid in when Neil Lennon said if he'd actually just put on... He's quite fast, Soyuncu. If he just put on the afterburners, he could have actually got there in time and run away with the ball.
So if you slide... Or, you know, if you just punched the guy in the face or gone over the ball into his foot. I mean, either of those would have possibly been okay as well. But look, it's Arsenal's apparently worst start... Or is it the worst start of anyone apart from West Ham in 1963 or something? It is apparently the first time Arsenal have been bottom of the league and Spurs have been top of the league at the same time.
Ugh. Do we know yet if Arteta was so annoyed when he was rewatching the Xhaka incident on his iPad, whether he was pissed off because of the decision that was made or
He must have been pissed off with Xhaka. I mean, if he's pissed off with the decision, then, like, I mean... It was so obvious. You're watching it. It was one of those where you're like, oh. But also, you were waiting for someone to get sent off on purpose. You know, you're like, well, there's an Arsenal player here who isn't going to want to stay out there till the end, you know? And surprise, surprise, Xhaka pops up with an insane, just like flying through the air, like, what do you think is going to happen here type of a challenge. So, look... I saw Ozil then got involved. It was taunting Arteta. Oh, trust the process, he says sarcastically. Like, the one decision they definitely got right is getting rid of that guy who has so far, I think he scored one goal in 15 appearances for Fenerbahce, which sounds about his level. But good to see that he's still bitter at the ex. How is he not embarrassed to do something like that? Like, seriously, how is he not embarrassed to post a sarcastic message gloating over Arteta at a bad moment when, like, he's supposed to really have moved on with his life? You know what I mean? I think it's a revealing moment. As for Arteta, though, obviously things are looking bad at this point. You know, you can't just get smashed this badly. I mean, bottom of the league, haven't scored a goal.
And what's Guardiola doing as well, by the way? Like, how does he think that helps?
Well, saying he's beyond a good manager.
Did he say, Murph?
He said he is beyond a good manager. It's beyond, my opinion of him is beyond what people can imagine. Which almost sounded like one of those, like, sort of, you know, like in the Amadeus movie. One hears such sounds, and what can one say but Salieri? You know, that's sort of like, well, you haven't actually said what you think, Pep, other than that it's beyond the usual range of opinion. I don't know. It's looking bad. But, you know, he's still got a few more games to go. And the point maybe he's going to make is, look, we always lose these games. We always lose to City. They always slaughter us. Chelsea always slaughter us. What's different about this season? The only different thing is that it's all happening close together at the start, and Spurs keep winning their games 1-0. You know, that's what's going on here. But it's not always going to be that way. We're not always going to play Man City. We're not always going to play Chelsea. We will at some point play a couple of teams that we can beat. Speaking of Chelsea... The Band of Brothers, as they were hailed by Thomas Tuchel. I think when you saw the celebrations of Chelsea at the end, you could see what a good performance they knew they had put in to go with 10 men all the way to 90 minutes and come away with the draw. I mean, it looked as though Chelsea were going to win. I mean, the Havertz scored. There wasn't a lot of X on the Havertz G, I have to say. Illustrating some of the issues with the model. Basically, there was...
Oh, Jesus. Could you please stop mentioning XG?
Sorry. It's just outrageous. The beginning of the season. It does show there wasn't much chance of him scoring the goal. And yet, he put it away very nicely.
I'd prefer if you just said that, though. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
It was a very difficult chance, and yet he converted the chance.
It worked well with Xhaka's name, though, in fairness.
That was good.
What I thought was interesting.
It was good.
What I thought was interesting about it was the Liverpool selection. First of all, Firmino came in, even though Jota had scored the previous two matches, which, okay, Firmino then got injured. Firmino did score in one of those games as well, I should say. So maybe Jota will play the next few games. Harvey Elliott played. And that was the interesting one. It was like, well, Thiago was sitting there on the bench. Thiago was sitting there thinking, I've spent my entire summer sitting on the bench watching 18-year-olds play in my position. What is going on here? When is somebody going to show me some respect? And I'm sure Thiago probably thought, when he saw the whole explosion in the game just before halftime, when Reece James got sent off and Liverpool equalised with the penalty, he must have thought at that point, well, this is when here's where I enter
Thiago
the game.
Thiago time.
Because that is exactly, if you recall, what happened in his debut. Thiago must have thought, well, history is repeating itself here. We're playing Chelsea early in the season. One of their players has just got sent off and it's in first half injury time. It was Christensen the last time. And on that occasion, Thiago replaced Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson, who I wouldn't say had his best game. I was watching him and thought, well, Henderson looks kind of like he's never played football before. He's in that stage of where he needs to play those 20 matches to get up to that match rhythm. You know, and you're kind of like, well, it will be December. At this rate, it will be December by the time you're back in the match rhythm. So I thought, well, maybe this is exactly the sort of situation in which Thiago excels. You know, Chelsea are like a butterfly that's been pinned down to the sort of drawing board, and Thiago's going to pull off the legs one by one. I mean, it's an ugly image. I don't know why it comes to my head, but that's just what I thought. That's the kind of thing Thiago's good at. You know, it's not a high tempo. You know, it's like it's methodical work that requires precision. You know, they're down to 10 men. Thiago will come on. He can dictate the game. He's good at putting people in good positions fractionally earlier than the defense expects them to be there. And so that's exactly what you need when you break down a team like Chelsea, who is going to defend very well and also going to be counter-attacking. Because in the game, it turned out Chelsea looked as likely to score in the second half as Liverpool, who had the extra man. And I was amazed that Thiago didn't come on until like in the last 15 minutes. Eventually that substitution was made. And I thought, well, really, what's the point of having this guy? You know, if you're not going to use him in a situation like that, when are you going to use him? So, I haven't even mentioned Naby Keita. Same situation. I don't think he even got on at all. Then Gary Lineker, I saw, he said it many times, but the best passer in English football is Trent Alexander-Arnold. He should be playing like he did as a kid in midfield. Lamp switched, Kimmich too. The best players should be in a position where they can more frequently use their brilliance.
Didn't Gary Lineker previously state those views, or should I say piggybacked on the views of Ken Early, expressed in an Irish Times article?
He simply expressed agreement on with similar views.
Well, retweets don't necessarily mean an endorsement, but I think
he did say agree 100% with this or something
then,
like this.
Then provided
agree with
as well.
Most of this, I think. Well, he didn't specify that he agreed with 100%, but you know, he it was clear that he agreed with more than 85%, I would say. So, but then Jamie Carragher fired back. He said, Jamie Carragher, who is a Liverpool supporter, I think, says, no, he shouldn't. Fullbacks get more of the ball than anyone and a bit more time on it to pick out their passes. The way Klopp sets up, he's virtually a midfielder in possession anyway. The amount of assists he gets means it would be mad to change his position. To which I have to ask, well, you know, why don't all the greats play fullback, if that's the case? Why is Kevin De Bruyne not playing right back? Why does Bruno Fernandes not play right back? Why doesn't Neymar play right back or left back? You know, given that that's the position where a really talented, creative passer can influence the game to the greatest possible extent, why aren't they all playing there? Because the answer is it's a position where you can't do that. It's a limited position where you're there to basically, you know, if you're good at crossing, then you can do that. But a player of that level, you know, I mean a player like Kevin De Bruyne or Fernandes or whatever, has more chance to influence the game in the central position in the other team's half. So I think that's still the case with Trent Alexander-Arnold. Whether that suits Liverpool, I don't think it does. From their point of view, they're best off having him at right back, given the squad that they've got. you know, they've got quite a lot of midfielders, you know, including an 18-year-old who's keeping Thiago and Keita on the bench. So, you know, the last thing, I suppose, from their point of view, they need is Alexander-Arnold saying, I want to play in midfield as well. But I still think that would be the best thing for his career. Maybe it won't happen at Liverpool. But I see the other story that is around, say, I see the Times reporting that Michael Edwards, who has received a lot of credit over the years as being the kind of architect of this great Liverpool squad and transfer, you know, he's had a great hit rate in the transfer market, is thinking about leaving, is expected to leave at the end of his contract at the end of this season. You know, that's a sort of a, another one of those, well, time passes, everybody's moment in the sun passes. Who knows where next for Michael Edwards? But can you expect Liverpool to continue to have that little edge that they seem to have had for the few years in the transfer market, signing good players, getting more bang for their buck than most other clubs? Or is it just one of those things? I mean, they haven't really spent much money recently. They haven't spent too many books. I think maybe there's a bit coming from the FSG that, well, we told you we needed the Super League. We told you we needed all that extra money. You told us what you thought of that. And now you're going to have to get used to being poor. So that's the situation.
I said, Karen, it's Richard Keys. Prehistoric banter.
Please, it was just banter.
Is not acceptable in a modern world.
Do you have any regrets?
None. There are some dark forces at work here.
The eyes have it. The eyes have it. Unlocked.
Laurie Whitwell has been doing some great reporting on the Ronaldo return for The Athletic. A great story to report on, I would imagine, Laurie.
Yeah, exhilarating. I think I posted on Instagram, as obviously we have to do nowadays, you know, social media, that it was one of the most exhilarating days of my career. From a journalistic perspective, obviously, you know, I've got United affections as well, so perhaps there's a little bit of that within all the reporting. But no, just the way it developed, you know, from Thursday night to then Friday morning, and hearing different, you know, suggestions, rumours that then actually turned out to be, you know, factual information, speaking to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in the afternoon. I was fortunately down in the London office for the first time at The Athletic, and so you can kind of have a face-to-face dialogue with your editor and kind of make those calls quicker than perhaps if you were, you know, remotely working and trying to do it over Slack or email or calls. But yeah, the way it all sort of pulled together, really good team effort as well. Lots of people chipped in, so I'm pretty pleased with how the day went.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, a bit of old school reporting, yeah. But to use the modern parlance, have Man United won the transfer window?
I think when you look at the three players they've signed, you have to say, you know, they've done absolutely everything they could do, really. I mean, to bring in Jadon Sancho, 21-year-old, who, you know, you'd think has a high ceiling with a lot of room to develop. Rafael Varane, proven pedigree. He looked really good at Wolves yesterday. And then Cristiano Ronaldo, who feels like a bit of a game changer for not only the playing abilities of the team, or, you know, the goal-scoring capacity of the team, but also just the mood around the place. You know, the players will be buzzing, the manager's certainly happy. So I feel like those three signings, I can't see a club that's done better. Listen, it's what happens on the pitch that really matters. You know, they could all, you know, Jadon Sancho hasn't looked great so far, but I think there's plenty of room to grow there. But yeah, I think those three signings have been a really good window for Man United.
Why do you think they waited until the last minute to sign Cristiano Ronaldo when it looked as though he was going to join Manchester City instead?
Yeah, good question. There's a suggestion that they weren't sure that Juventus would let him go. So I think George Mendes...
Did they ask?
Yeah, well, George Mendes was offering, by all accounts. You know, it seemed like, you know, Ronaldo wanted to leave. You know, there was that clip of him loading his cars, wasn't there, into a van, I think, you know, in Turin, and shipping them off, and that was a kind of indication at early on in the summer that, yeah, he was leaving. But there was also sort of counter suggestions that he does that every summer. But no, apparently George Mendes was offering Ronaldo around, but I think United were reluctant, or at least a bit hesitant, or weren't exactly sure whether he would leave, whether he was, you know, Juventus would let him leave. So, you know, they kind of, I think, pursued other transfer targets. It is a sort of fact, really, that United only tend to progress one transfer at a time, and that means that, you know, business can be slow. So Jadon Sancho was the first thing, which I think everyone can appreciate was a primary transfer to do. Rafael Varane then became, you know, more available, and then they've switched to Ronaldo, and clearly Manchester City's involvement really did press it home. I think that two things, they realised that actually, yes, he was leaving Juventus and yes, he was really going to sign for Manchester City. So it was a deal they could do themselves. And then further to that, it was the idea that, you know, seeing him line up for Manchester City across town, given his sort of legendary status at United, was not something that a lot of people could find palatable at Manchester United, not least to Alex Ferguson, who very much got involved.
What about Ferguson's role? I find Ferguson's role in this really interesting because he's been retired a long time now. You know, he's had his health problems. I know that he's obviously at the games, you know, continues to enthusiastically support the team. But I find it sort of extraordinary that he would be involved in a massive signing like this, which is going to completely rearrange the hierarchy within that dressing room.
Yes. I think he has acted... If a different manager was in place, maybe, you know, he wouldn't have got so involved. You know, if it had been Jose Mourinho, I'd be surprised if Ferguson would have got involved to this extent. But clearly, Ferguson and Solskjaer are very close. Solskjaer, for sure, has wanted Ronaldo back, you know, for basically since he's become manager of Manchester United. I think they've always looked at, would he come back? Is it possible, feasible? I wrote in May that, if he was available, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer would have no hesitation in signing him up. So that's from the manager. And then, you know, if you've got him and Ferguson talking fairly frequently, it's a quite quick decision for Ferguson to go, right, I can step in here. He's got such a history with Ronaldo. You know, he obviously signed him when he was just a teenager and he grew in that period. There was a lot of fatherly affection there for him, particularly when Ronaldo had the fallout with Ruud van Nistelrooy, for example, and also when his own father died. You know, got a lot of compassion from Sir Alex. So I think they have a really genuinely good bond. So it would be unusual for him not to get involved really in that situation. You know, football's about relationships and about emotion, and clearly Ferguson pulled on the heartstrings a little bit there. Maybe he was sterner in his conversation, even so, you know, suggesting that to go to Man City would tarnish his legacy. I don't know. I think certainly he was animated. And I think also United have perhaps... you know, missed out on some signings previously where Ferguson might have felt actually we could have done that one, and I think he saw this one as a really transformative signing for Manchester United. So, you know, he wanted to get involved, but he also had the club's blessing to get involved. You know, Solskjaer certainly was on board with it.
It does look though as though it was City that focused the mind here, because, you know, if they wanted to find out whether Ronaldo was going to leave Juventus, they could always have picked up the phone and said, listen. Will you sell us Ronaldo? We see that you've got a lot of problems, and it kind of seems as though it was like almost a political consideration which took precedence. I mean, this is a club where hard as it is to remember, when you see these joyous scenes yesterday of United fans with the cardboard cutout of Ronaldo, like just celebrating having this cardboard cutout to sort of throw around after a few minutes of this game. That these are some of the same fans who were invading Old Trafford, forcing the postponement of the Liverpool game, and literally screaming for blood. That was in May. Yeah. So this is pretty big turnaround, and it seems as though maybe that was more than footballing considerations what has driven this.
I generally think it's a football decision primarily, because, like I say, Solskjaer's wanted him. You know, and the recruitment side are very happy with bringing a player on board that, you know, still scored a lot of goals in Serie A, was a very good player at the Euros. Admittedly, will he properly suit the team ethic? You know, will he press? You know, that's something to be found out, I suppose.
He definitely won't. It would be insane to expect him to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess that is something that Solskjaer will have to contend with, and maybe it will turn out to be you know, a disastrous move from a football position. But for now, they feel like it's a good football decision. Now, obviously, on top of that, you'd be a fool to think that United didn't see the benefit, you know, on the hierarchy side, as you say, that was so heavily scrutinised, that was, you know, loathed, as you say, during the Super League events. For them to think, actually, this could work out really well for us, and the whole mood of the club would be shifted. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, I mean, that atmosphere for the Newcastle game on September the 11th, when Ronaldo should make his debut, is going to be incredible. You can just imagine it. You know, obviously, the way that Rafael Varane was presented to the pitch before the Leeds game, you know, there was an energy in the stadium then, and I think it will be multiplied by a number of factors for Ronaldo's return. So clearly that is an element at play, and I'm sure, you know, they've looked at the commercial pull of it and the sponsorship deals that can perhaps be done off the back of it and thought, yeah, it's a move that suits everybody.
Suits everybody, and you've already said that his teammates will be buzzing. And, you know, watching their reactions, their social media reactions, it's kind of clear that they are. David De Gea probably gave the best one, actually, when he was interviewed after the match, and he just said, who? You know, a little, so, you know, took a little bit of the sting of the situation. But do you think that they will all be buzzing? I mean, it's fine for David De Gea. His place isn't under threat. Mm-hmm. But what about Edinson Cavani? Is he really going to be that delighted about the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is going to be taking his place? Or, you know, Marcus Rashford talks about how great it is. But between the arrival of Sancho and Ronaldo, where does he fit in? I mean, there's a few noses surely going to be out of joint here.
Well, I think it probably accelerates an exit. I don't know who, but I would imagine that one of those, not one of those forwards, but a forward.
Jesse Lingard and Daniel James can pack their bags.
Well, this is it. They're the two that you'd think, okay, the clubs that are interested in them, this is a real opportunity for them. Bruno Fernandes, will he be on penalties? That's a consideration. You know,
I mean, clearly not.
Clearly not, yeah. And then... with Cavani, I mean, it's interesting. Actually, he was going to go away with Uruguay, you know, for this September break, and now he's not. You know, Uruguay have announced that. So I wonder, you know, there's an element that the quarantine in a hotel dawned on him and realised that actually that was not a good thing to do for 10 days and the fitness that he likes to keep. You know, he's quite particular about his fitness, so that would have hampered that, but. Is there another consideration that actually he needs to be in Manchester to keep his place and keep playing? I don't think it's a bad thing that you've got a number of players that Solskjaer can select. Certainly, you know, he was criticised for that last season, I think probably fairly, when he doesn't make substitutions, but he would have felt that he didn't have the options to really change the game in a positive way. You know, his players out on the pitch were the best ones he had available, whereas you look at yesterday, and I know obviously Ronaldo wasn't in the squad, but you had Cavani coming off the bench, you had Martial coming off the bench. I know there's been you know, sort of doubt about whether Martial's really at it so far this season, but he played quite well off the bench. So Solskjaer had options to improve matters, and I know they were fortunate to win the game, but at least that was something that Solskjaer was certainly happy with, you know, that he's got more players that he can pick from.
I mean, he's got a lot more players he can pick from. And I just wonder what shape do you think this team is ultimately going to assume? Because, I mean, I saw Solskjaer yesterday saying, well, you know, we can play two up front, we can play three up front, you know, there's different formations. But they have favoured essentially a front four of Bruno Fernandes, you know, centre forward, a left winger, a right winger. And Ronaldo is, I assume, going to be the centre forward now.
I would assume so, yeah. I mean, Solskjaer said yesterday he's not come to sit on the bench, which was a pretty resounding example of what he expects. I suppose, you know, he's 36, Cavani's 34. So, you know, Cavani was always expected this season to rotate out of that centre-forward position. It wasn't necessarily that he was going to start every game, particularly if he does go and play for Uruguay, maybe in October or November. You know, that's still to be decided, I suppose. But I would imagine, yeah, Ronaldo is a centre-forward. You know, Rashford or Sancho on the left. Greenwood really is kind of a fixture now. You know, the way that he started this season, you know, I think probably on the right, I don't necessarily think he has to start up front, Greenwood. And then, yeah, Bruno is number 10, and Paul Pogba. I mean, he played deep midfield yesterday. It's a position that I don't think suits him wholly.
You had an exchange with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We can actually hear that now.
Hi Ole, can I just ask what you thought of the midfield today? It looked like a little bit Fred might have got overrun in the first half, and where exactly was Paul playing?
Have you not seen the game where Paul was playing? That's go back and see the game, you can see where Paul was playing.
So I mean, you did see the game. Laurie, where did Paul Pogba play?
Yeah, he didn't like the question, did he? Maybe I could have phrased it differently in terms of.
I don't know what didn't he like about the question. It seems like a perfectly relevant question. Good. I mean, I saw the game as well, Laurie. My interpretation of my question as I watched the game was, where is Manchester United's midfield? What is going on here? Why is it every time they lose the ball, I just see Wolves players tearing through just acres of empty space? What's happening?
Yeah, that was kind of where I was coming from, really. I think he's protective over Fred. I think Fred's one of a favourite of his because of the way he is committed, you know, the energy that he brings and the press, you know, the pressing, the tackles that he tries to put in. But he was just getting beaten every time, wasn't he? Particularly by Adama. And listen, Adama's a difficult player to stop, but it was comical at times in the first half, the amount that Fred was getting beaten. And I felt Pogba was maybe a bit more advanced in that first half and then dropped a bit deep in the second half. And there was a couple of moments actually where it looked like there was no midfield. It was sort of Pogba deep, and then you had four players, you know, 30, 40 yards up ahead all in a line, and he was going to do a long ball over the top. And listen, he had two balls round the side to Bruno. You know, the first one, he was slightly offside where he scored, and then the second one where he tried to square it and it didn't go in, where he can clearly execute those balls, but it felt a little, it felt disjointed. And that was where I was kind of coming from with the question. Maybe it's something that Solskjaer is very attuned to, and in kind of classic Siege mentality, you know, is rejecting that on the surface, but underneath knows that it's an issue. But he just wants to defend his players.
Well, it is a really relevant issue because he has used Pogba in a lot of games wide left, or, you know, it's effectively in the front three, or using one of those slots on the team with two defensive midfielders. You know, this was the setup, say, against Leeds when they won 5-1, and obviously Pogba got four assists, and it's been the case in a lot of games when Pogba's played well. And there has been this recurring issue, which your question was touching on. So it's not an issue they can really ignore. I mean, whatever about sort of brushing it away in a press conference, another team other than Wolves will kill them with that. Like, I mean, Wolves should have won the game. You know, I got so lucky yesterday, not only with their goal, but with Wolves missing so many chances. And that's not a situation they can allow to happen in many more games this season, or Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to be out of a job. So the question here, aside from that observation by me, which I'm not really sure what you're supposed to say, do you think that they will now sign somebody else? Do they actually need somebody else? Like, they were linked with Saul, you know, from Atletico, and you could see how he might fill that gap that we're talking about in the team. Or does he think, or do you think that, you know, between Fred and McTominay and Pogba, they're going to be able to muddle through here?
Yeah, the signing is a really interesting one, and that was something I wrote about on The Athletic last week after the Southampton game, where again it was apparent that there was some kind of, you know, midfield issue. Saul Niguez certainly is available. You know, United know about this for months, but haven't, you know, pressed ahead with talks. So, you know, we'll wait and see if in the last sort of 48 hours of the transfer window whether that changes. There's obviously other options that they could go for. Camavinga's, you know, been mentioned. Declan Rice is somebody that Solskjaer definitely likes, but clearly he's a lot of money. So that one might have to wait until, you know, next summer or even after that, because his contract's quite a long time. I get the impression that they've spent their money and that the midfield now, yeah, will have to make do. Scott McTominay's injury, the surgery that he's had on his groin, I think will keep him out for about a month, they're hopeful. So, you know, it's not too long that they have to wait without him. And I know that he's not everyone's cup of tea, but I think he does at least provide some control in midfield, which is what they really didn't have against Wolves. And they don't often have, to be fair. You know, it's not like they're certainly not a Man City kind of side where they will dominate possession and keep control of the ball. They, you know, they're sort of ball winners and then drivers with the ball, and it's kind of fast turnovers, isn't it? So, I mean, you've got Nemanja Matic there as an alternative, and it, you know, he looked sort of okay in pre-season, but against Southampton, there was a number of misplaced passes. So, you know, I'm sure he will feature as well in this run. But yeah, I mean, a midfielder Pogba and Fred was not great against Wolves, so I'd be surprised if we see that again. That being said, you know, the options there aren't vast for Solskjaer at the present.
Larry, I'll say one thing for the Glazers as owners of sports teams. They're not afraid to throw a lot of money at a really, really ancient franchise player. I mean, they've got Tom Brady, the Buccaneers, who's delivered them a Super Bowl in his mid-40s. So my question is, how many years do you reckon they're expecting to get out of Ronaldo? Because we're all saying, oh, he's 36, he's past his best, he won't be around forever. But do they think that he will be around, if not forever, then at least for a few more years?
I'd love to know how much research they've done into, you know, his fitness levels. You know, I'm sure they've got anecdotal evidence and you can see how many games he's played. So that's cool. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Obviously, he's got a 2-year contract. So, you know, that takes him to 38. For sure, the Tom Brady thing, I think, is a factor in the Glazers going, actually, yeah, this could work, you know.
Do you think so? Yeah,
I think
so.
Work
for them there, yeah.
Yeah, just because, I mean, Joel Glazer gets involved in these kind of things. You know, he does, you know, hold the purse strings. You know, certainly with Jadon Sancho last summer, he was saying that, you know, they didn't want to pay any more than a set price. I think it was sort of like, you know, maybe 100 million euros. He likes his data. So, you know, that was sort of another aspect to it. You know,
there is a big difference. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't have to run, you know, very true. Much, if at all. Even in his prime, he wasn't exactly a running quarterback. So, I mean,
Ronaldo, he has to, you know, sprint 12 or 13 times in 90 minutes. I mean,
I mean, that's 12 or 13 times more than Brady usually has to, but.
Yeah, it's more in the brain, isn't it? The quarterback, you know, it's as long as the arms are all right and the brain's still functioning, you're usually okay, aren't you, for a match? Whereas I suppose there's a bit more athleticism required in football. But, you know, Ronaldo is a specimen, isn't he? You know, he has water with his lunch and you know, chicken breasts and takes Patrice Evra out for keepy uppies, you know, as he's inviting him over and socialising. So he's a bit of a freak.
Laurie, listen, brilliant reporting. Thanks a million for talking to us today.
Cheers, guys.
One thing we haven't mentioned is Ronaldo's second debut for Manchester United. It happens against Newcastle, September the 11th.
Sorry,
Saturday.
Owen, can I stop you there? Mm-hmm. Owen, sorry, just yeah. Sorry. You know that I am a big follower of TV schedules.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, will that be available to view anywhere in Ireland or?
Well, Murphy's a Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff, which makes it a lot.
Oh, well, hold on. Hold on. You're telling me it's the Ronaldo's second debut for Manchester United is live on
second
Premier
coming.
Sports 1.
There's going to be a lot of people annoyed in the. Well, I think it's already. I did text you, Ken, about an hour or so after the news on Friday, and I said, I wonder how long it's going to take everyone in the, you know, watching in the UK based Man United fans to work out that they won't be able to watch that match live because of the weird rule in England and the rest of UK that you can't show football at 3
yeah.
o'clock on Saturday.
Well, are you gonna give the give it the old montage, pre-match montage? Somewhere in sands of the desert, a shape with lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun is moving its slow thighs.
How did you know? Were you in our meeting?
What rough beast. What rough beast. It's our come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. And then it's just like, yeah, upbeat music, Ronaldo playing and Ronaldo scoring the free kick.
Pretty much chicken. Have you watched football on TV before?
The blood dimmed. The blood dimmed tide is loose. You should totally do the voiceover, Owen.
They say he is a legend.
Do you know who your pundits are?
Oh, but yeah, it's a couple of weeks away, Ken. That's the international break to come. You know?
Striding purposefully across a football field, staring down the camera. This could be powerful. Like
a few people angling to get on that punditry because, you know, I mean, if Rio can't do it on a English, I mean, it might be worth the call. Putting in a little call there because, you know, I mean, he's going to want to comment on this. You know, he's going to want to comment on it. The other thing that we should mention, and just before we finish, is that the FAI have announced that they are now putting tickets on sale for the games, which are coming up this weekend. So they go on sale, general sale, from 11 p.m. tonight at fai.ie tickets.
So this is Azerbaijan at the weekend.
Azerbaijan.
Serbia on the following Tuesday.
Azerbaijan on Saturday and Serbia on Tuesday. Both of them are huge World Cup games. We could obviously have suffered a lot of defeats in the group by the time we play Azerbaijan, but that's when the comeback starts. And if you want to be there when the comeback starts with 24,999 other Ireland fans, then get onto fai.ie tickets and book now. Well, no, don't book now. Book from 11 p.m. Irish time. Today.
It's international football for the next week or so, starting in the Algarve against Portugal. Kenny is flying out later today, Ken?
Yes, I better get off here, actually. I'm
get off,
go.
Yep. Richie's going to be on the show on Thursday then, after his tour de force last week when discussing the reluctance of some footballers to get the COVID vaccine. He spoke about the different types of approach, the carrot and the stick approach to encouraging vaccine-hesitant sports people to go and get that vaccine.
As a manager, you've access to these players and you're in a position of real influence, because dangling, like, the unspoken threat that you always have is, like, deselection. I'm going to name the squad next week and you're not going to be in it. I'm going to name the team on Friday and your name won't be called out. Do you know what I mean? You're in a position of real authority and influence when you're the manager of somebody who really wants to play for your team. It's a little bit more complicated if you're the club manager, because you really want the players involved and most of them are on big, big contracts and huge wages. So you don't want to alienate yourself from really key players. So that has to be done a bit more tactfully. But if you're an international manager, I assume you're talking about a group of players who really want to play for the country. And then you kind of have to test, well, what are their measures of resolve here? How important is it for them to not be vaccinated? And what are their reasons? Because one of the consequences of not getting vaccinated is they don't get picked for the Ireland squad, for example, or the England squad or the Finland squad or whoever. So those I assume are strategies or options that managers or authorities or FAs will start to consider down the road, because, again, the nature of football is that you can't really carry a large unvaccinated population without there being consequences.
Richie delivering the goods as always last week. Looking forward to hearing from him on Thursday. Well, I think I'm looking forward to hearing from him on Thursday. Depends how things go on Wednesday night, I suppose. Thanks, Ken. Get on that flight. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Alan.
Thanks, Owen. Travel safely, Ken, and bon voyage.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, what's next for you? Well, thanks for Hathaway. Right now, myself and Dr. Alban, we've got a track on the market called I Love the 90s. It's doing very well in Scandinavia.
What one is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.